Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janabalaba Girivaradhari. Gopi Janabalaba Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Tira Banachari Jamuna Tira Banachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Ballabha Girivaradhari Jana Balaba Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Could you all move up? Fill up the front seats, please. I'll move this back. Thank you very much. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam namaskritya. Naram chaiva narottamam. Devim sarasatim vyasam. Tato jaya mudiraye. Today is the appearance day of Lord Balaram, the best of all days. Yes. To drink Varuni Prashadam. Hare Krishna. This is a lecture. I'm just going to read excerpts, some excerpts from this and some other places, and we'll have some discussion about Lord Balaram. Prabhupada has no recorded lectures that I found on Balaram's appearance day, but on Lord Nityananda's appearance day, and he talks about Lord Balaram also, because Lord Nityananda is Lord Baladev himself. This is recorded in Bhubaneswar, February 2nd, 1977. So today, the appearance day of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Nityananda Prabhu is Baladev, Baladev Tattva. Rajendra Nandana Jay, Shachi Suta Oelo She, Balaram Hoelo Nitai. Who was formerly the son of Nanda Maharaj, he has appeared as the son of Sachidevi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mother was named Sachidevi. So Krishna is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Balaram is Nityananda Prabhu. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's a story of Sachi Mata having a dream. And in that dream, her deities of Krishna and Balaram are greeted by Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. And they begin to fight. And Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya approach Krishna Balaram and say, especially Nityananda Prabhu is saying, now you get down from there. This is our age. And those are our sweets there. Those are for us. And they begin to argue back and forth. And then Mother Sachi, when she awakes from the dream, she tells Nimai about this dream, and he says, oh, very powerful dream that you've had. And so in this dream, she actually saw how Krishna and Balaram were being replaced by Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and they are having an argument over the spot. So as Prabhupada's pointing out here, Lord Nityananda appeared as Lord Baladev and Lord Krishna as is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rajendra Nandana Jay Sachi Sutta Hoilo She Balaram Hoilo Nitai. So Balaram, in the Vedic literature, it is said, Nayamatma Bala Hinena Labhya Na Bahuna Shutena. So Bala means strength. Sometimes some rascal philosophers, they take it that Bala means bodily strength. They propagate this philosophy that unless you are bodily stout and strong, you cannot achieve spiritual salvation. You must be very strong and stout and eat meat and fight, and then you'll get next spiritual birth. Have you heard that philosophy? I haven't heard it that much either, but obviously there are people who propagate that. No, this bala, this strength is different. This is spiritual strength. The difficulty of the present situation is actually we are moving on account of spiritual strength. But they have no information of the spiritual strength. They are thinking of material strength. That is expressed here, that Ahankara mata hoila nitai para pasharia. Asatyeri satyakori mani. This is due to ahankar. Ahankara vimudatma kartanam iti manyate. Those who are vimuda, especially rascal. Mudha, rascals. And vi means vishesha, visheshanam, particularly. Ahankara vimudhatma. The same thing which is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, Narottam Das Thakur says the same thing in plain Bengali language. Ahankare matahoila nitai pada, by the spell of maya. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaram iti manyate. They are thinking that we are independent. We can do whatever we like. This is called ahankara vimudhatma. Under false pretext, false prestige, everyone is thinking that we are independent. We can find out the solution of the problems of life by material adjustment, so on and so on. So that is our material disease. Ahankara vimudhatma. Bewildered, they do not understand that the real strength is spiritual strength. We see daily that a very strong man, very powerful man, very good brain, very good scientist. So where is the strength? The strength is Atma. As soon as the Atma or the soul goes out of this body, so intelligent, so strong, and so many things, that is nothing. That is the difference between dead man and a living man. A living man is very powerful, very good position, everything. As soon as he lies down, he is lying down on the floor, and if you kick him on the face, he'll not protest. So where is that strength? The strength is gone. That is spiritual strength. On that spiritual strength, the body moves. Suppose you've got a very good car, Mercedes car or Rolls-Royce car. But when there is no petrol, how will the car move? It is not possible. There is spirit, petrol spirit. Similarly, real strength is spiritual strength. That spiritual strength is Balaram. Bala means strength. Therefore, we have to take shelter of the lotus feet of Balaram, Guru Tattva. Balaram means Guru Tattva. Balaram represents Guru. Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasada. If we want to understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if we want to understand Krishna, then we must take shelter of Balaram. Nayamatma Balahinena Labhya. This Balahinena Labhya, this Vedic injunction means, without the mercy of Balaram, you cannot understand, you cannot realize your spiritual identification. So that Balaram comes as Nityananda Prabhu, Balaram Hoilo Nitai. Therefore, we must take shelter of Balaram. That is, this song has been sung by Narottam Das Thakur. Nitai Parakamala Koti Chandra Shushital. So here, Srila Prabhupada mentions Balaram as Guru Tattva. And Krishna, as we have just talked about and heard in the Sri Brahma Samhita, he's one absolute truth, but he expands himself. And his first expansion is Balaram, who is exactly the same as Krishna, except for his color and his mood. He's white, and he's also a servant of Krishna. And by the way, who's stronger, Krishna or Balaram? You said Balaram? So Prabhupada asked Hare Krishna. Prabhupada asked this question to an assembly of devotees, and most devotees said, Balaram's stronger. And Giriraj Maharaj was there, and he said, Krishna is stronger. And Prabhupada said, why? And he said, you see that Balaram is resting on the shoulder of Krishna. So Krishna is supporting Balaram. Prabhupada said, very good. This is very good. Krishna is stronger. There are many pastimes in which we see the role of Balaram and Krishna. One of them is the Brahma Vimohana Lila. In the Brahma Vimohana Lila, Krishna went with his cowherd boyfriends to have a picnic in the forest. What could be better? He woke up all his friends early in the morning by blowing on his buffalo horn and said, come on, everybody, let's go to the forest. Krishna is always enjoying with his friends, his family, his lovers in the land of Vrindavan. And they all gathered together with all their cows and calves, and they went off. And of course, on the way to the picnic, there was a big incident because they ran into a huge snake. And that snake was so big that they saw his upper lip was touching the sky. And it was a cavernous opening, and there was a bad fishy smell coming from that. And from that snake. And the coward boys thought, this must be some big demon who's here just to swallow us all up. And then they thought, let's go inside. Because they reasoned that Krishna's here. He'll protect us no matter what happens if we go inside the big snake. And so they happily charged into the mouth of Agasura. And Krishna was watching, and he was amazed at how his energies were working. And then, of course, Krishna went inside, and he saved his coward boyfriends from Agasura. The demigods who were watching thought, oh, this is the end. They've all walked inside. But Krishna expanded himself inside Agasura and choked out his life air. And the Agasura demon, it left his body, the soul left his body, and entered within Krishna. And that snake stayed there for a year for pleasure pastimes. He dried up, and the boys used to go there and play on the snake. Then, of course, they went for their picnic. And during that time, Brahma was watching. And he was familiar with the Lord, but he wasn't familiar with Krishna playing this role as a cowherd. And he saw that Krishna and all his friends were sharing their lunches to see who had the best one. And some of them were tasting it, and then to make sure it was the best, and they'd also give it to Krishna. And this was, as we hear from the Brahma Samhita, Brahma's other name is Vidhi, means rules and regulations. And he thought, how could this be? The Supreme Personality of God, and he wanted to test his powers. So Brahma, being very powerful, after all, he creates the whole universe. He's the secondary creator. He thought, let me see. And he stole away the calves who had wandered off and searching for new grasses. And then when Krishna went looking for the calves, Brahma took the opportunity while they were alone to steal away all the boys also. So when Krishna saw that the cows and the calves were gone, and also the boys were gone, then he realized it was Brahma playing a trick, so he expanded himself into the exact duplicate of the boys and the calves. No difference at all. Everything exactly the same, except now they're expansions of Vishnu rather than devotees. So they went back to the village, and in the village, the mothers of the boys now had infinitely more affection for the boys, as they did. They had affection for their sons, but now it was infinitely more. They were fawning over them, and they were feeding them and taking care of them in every way, rubbing them with oil, and they became so affectionate towards these boys because now they were actually Krishna. And this is partly Krishna's arrangement because all of them desired to be with Krishna and to take care of Krishna personally. So he fulfilled their desires by expanding into their own sons. And also, there was an incident with the calves. Actually, the boys were taking care of the calves that had grown up a little bit. They were already weaned off the milk of their mothers. And they were at the bottom of Govardhan Hill, and all the cows and bulls were at the top of the hill. And when they saw these calves at the bottom of Govardhan Hill, who were actually Krishna expanded into the calves, they became so attracted. Now, they had already been separated because at a certain time they separate them, but now these cows and bulls, they ran down the hill as if they had one set of legs. even though it was a very rough path, you know, Govardhan Hill, it's got many crevasses and it's very steep in some places, but they charged down the hill with their tails straight in the air and their necks straight out of anticipation of reaching the calves. And when they did, they began to feed them, give them milk, and they were licking their bodies with great anxiety out of affection, because these were now expansions of Krishna. Now, on the day that they had gone for the picnic and the cows and boys had been stolen away, Balaram was not there. Apparently, it was his birthday that day, so he didn't go. He had been noticing these things going on, especially when he saw the cows run down the hill to greet the calves. He thought, something's going on here. And he didn't know what it was. And he was trying to figure it out. And I read last night that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that Krishna had very specifically used his yoga maya potency to cover everyone so they couldn't see exactly what was going on. And even Balaram was blocked from seeing the actual pastime that was happening when Krishna expanded himself by Krishna's yoga maya. He couldn't see what Krishna was doing, how he had expanded himself in the cows, into the calves and into the boys. So then Krishna began to take off layers of yoga maya, one after another, so that Balaram could actually see what was taking place. And then Balaram saw that actually these were all expansions of Krishna, and that he had done this as a way to show the superior potency that he had over Brahma. Now the reason, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, that Krishna covered this pastime from the vision of Lord Balaram is that he knew that Balaram would feel great separation from some of his friends like Sridham and others. And therefore, he didn't want to reveal this pastime to him. He wanted to keep everything status quo. So in this pastime, we see the superior power of Lord Krishna, the supreme cause of all causes, that even his first expansion, Balaram, can become covered by the power of the yogamaya potency so that he can't exactly understand what's going on. Maya javanikachanam ajnad hoksa jamavyam nalakshase mudadrisha nato natya daro yata. Queen Kunti says to Krishna, you're just like a dramatic actor on a stage, and it's really hard to tell who you are and what you're doing, because you dress up in different ways, and then there's a curtain of yoga maya that goes in front, and then who can tell exactly how you're acting? Now, ahankara vimudhatma, those who are enamored of the material energy, they can't see anything. All they can perceive is the illusory potency of the Lord, Mahamaya, and they become absorbed in the thought of aham mameti, I am my body, and all the things in relationship with my body are me, and that's illusion. But by the mercy of Balaram, who is the guru, who is Guru Tattva, Balaram expands himself and he comes to save the conditioned souls from this illusory conception of life. Just as we see Lord Nityananda, who's Balaram himself, he came and saved the most fallen conditioned souls wherever he went. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that you shouldn't bewilder the mind of the less intelligent by trying to preach Krishna consciousness to them, because it'll just disturb their minds, they won't understand. But what does Prabhupada say in the purport to that verse?
We should engage them in devotional sound services.
What does he say specifically in that last paragraph? Where's the microphone for the third quadrant? Yeah.
Does he say that the devotee takes the risk to because he knows that Krishna's higher desire is to to have the people come back to him, so he takes the risk of disturbing them for the higher. He's more merciful than Krishna.
It. Yeah, he takes the risk, and he is actually more merciful than Krishna, because he knows Krishna's purpose. He understands, even though Krishna said this, he knows Krishna's purpose. Therefore, he goes out anyway, and he'll save the conditioned souls. This is Guru Tattva, Balaram, Nityananda Balaram, who takes it upon himself to go out and bring people to Krishna. Now, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Lord Nityananda to go out and teach everybody to chant Hare Krishna. But what did he do? He went out and told everyone to chant the names of Lord Gauranga. Vajra Gauranga, Laha Gauranga. So, he has this very intimate relationship with Krishna, and he knows Krishna's purpose. And then he brings the conditioned souls back to Krishna. This is the Guru Tattva. He's the representative. He knows the innermost desire. What is it? What is Krishna's purpose? And then he fulfills that purpose by bringing other souls back. And souls are suffering in this world due to this ahankar. The ahankar means this false identification, myself as the body. And this is a suffering condition for the soul, that I'm absorbed in an illusory condition of life. I don't know my real benefit, and I'm simply being abused by the material energy. Like a child who runs away from home and then gets taken in by bad foster parents. He has nowhere else to go, but he's being maintained there, and he's abused by the foster parents. And this is this condition of the soul in the material world. And Lord Balaram, Guru, comes to save the soul from that condition and teach that nasato vidite bhavo na bhavo vidite sita ubaryor api drishton tas twanios tatvadarshibi, that there's a difference between yourself and your body, and that your real interest is in your spirit self, not in the body. This is the great wealth that Lord Balaram Nityananda gives, to understand that what is our higher purpose in life. Manushya janma paya Radha Krishna na bhajiya janiya shunya bhishakainu. Unless you come to Radha Krishna, you cannot get real pleasure. If you want to dance and get pleasure, don't dance independently. Dance with Krishna, then you'll be happy. The dancing is there, but dancing without association of Krishna. Just like here in our temple, we are also eating, but we are eating the remnants of foodstuff left by Krishna. That is real pleasure. It is not that we are stopping eating. We are not stopping eating. We are not dry philosophers. Krishna boro doya moi kori bari jihwa jai. Swa prasad anadilo bai. All over the world, we are eating Krishna prasadam, and we have got good experience. At least 10,000 men and women, they are taking Krishna prasadam, but we have no anxiety. A family consists of a few members. They are full of anxiety how to maintain the family, and we are maintaining a family of 10,000 men. We have no anxiety. Just see practically, we have no anxiety. We require thousands and thousands of rupees for maintaining Europe, America, a costly affair, but because we are under the shelter of Nityananda Prabhu, Balaram, we have no anxiety. That means material life means anxiety. You cannot avoid anxiety if you lead a material life. Then you will all be anxious. That is Prahlad Maharaj's instruction. He was asked by his father, "My dear son, what have you learned the best thing from your teachers?" So he replied, "My dear father," he never said, "my dear father." He said, "my dear best of the asuras, asuryavarya, tatsadumanye suravarya dehinam, tatsadumanye suravarya dehinam sadasamudvigna diyam asadgrahat." The whole human society is suffering, at least suffering from one disease, anxiety. Ask anybody, take one small ant and take the big elephant. Take the President of the United States or take one street beggar, ask him whether you are free from anxiety. Nobody will say, "No, I am full of anxiety. That's a fact. So why they are in anxiety, full of anxiety? That Prahlad Maharaj has replied, Sadasamud Vigna Dhyama Sad Grahat. Books on yoga and meditation shows you how to get free from stress. You've heard of stress before, right? Because we have taken a sad vastu, that which will not exist. Everything, whatever you've got, this body will not exist. And this is the main platform of our existence. In the material world, so long as the body is there, you exist. So Prahlad Maharaj said that real solution of problems of life is to get out of this material condition. That is the best thing, in my opinion. Sada samud vigna diyam asad. That is Vedic injunction also. Asato ma sadgama. Do not live in this asat, in this material condition. Sadgama. Go to real existence. That real existence means spiritual life. Nahanyate hanyamani sharire. So if we actually want blissful life, then we must get out of this material existence. That is Prahlad Maharaj's instructions. Samudvigna diyam. And if you remain in the material existence, you must suffer some anxiety. There is no excuse. So this day, which is the full moon day, is a great relief. And in another lecture on the verse, Nitai Padakamala, about Nityananda Balaram, Srila Prabhupada speaks about the soothing rays that come from Lord Balaram, this relief. And here we're hearing about the anxiety of material existence. Everybody from the ant to the elephant to the President of the United States, especially the President of the United States, is in full of anxiety because of misidentification with the body. So Nityananda Balaram comes to relieve us of that great anxiety and put us into spiritual bliss by giving the instruction how we can come back. And what a relief it is. I remember the first time that I received the Back to Godhead magazine and was practically praying that I could have some guidance. And then somebody, a friend of mine from high school, brought it to my house. I had no idea what it was, but when I saw it, then I felt immediate relief that here is the message from the spiritual world that is will cure all my problems. And then I felt happiness. And this is the campaign of Lord Nityananda to go and give everyone an opportunity to become relieved from the material existence. He is Balaram in the mood of the servant. As we said, that he's the first expansion of Krishna. He looks just like Krishna, but he's white. And he is in the mood of a servant of Krishna. And he acts as Krishna's seat. He acts as his Brahmin thread. He expands himself into his shoes. Also, Sheshanag. So when Lord Mahavishnu is lying in the ocean, that couch that's holding him up, the big Sheshanag. This is the expansion of Balaram. In fact, the whole spiritual world is maintained by this Sundini potency, which is Balaram. So he's serving Krishna and everyone in the spiritual world by expanding. This is his mood. And all of the devotees follow in the mood of Lord Balaram. They're all eager for service, just as Lord Balaram is showing. There's another pastime that shows Balaram's relationship with Krishna. And this is another day when Balaram isn't there. Now, Balaram's known as Dauji. There's a temple of Dauji that you can go and visit when you're walking around Govardhan Hill. Just after you pass Aniyor, just on the last part of Aniyor, if you take a right, you'll see a little sign on the brick wall that says Dauji. And then you take a right, and you could walk up a few blocks, and there's a beautiful little temple where the deity of Balaram is kept. And just past that, only about a 5-minute walk past that temple, then you'll come to Govindakund. And actually before that, before Govindakund even, you'll find Sankarshan Kund. So all these reminders and all the different forms of the Lord are there within the Holy Dham. And one day in Vrindavan, Krishna, although he was told not to, he went down to the Kaliya Ghat. And there, the big snake, Kaliya, had poisoned the water, and he was swimming. And Krishna saw this, and what did he do? Even though he was told not to, he jumped in the water. He got up on a tree, he tightened his belt, he flapped his arms like a wrestler, and he jumped in the water. And Kaliya was disturbed because Krishna, although he's just a little boy, he's the source of everything. And when he hit the water, there was quite an impact. And Kaliya could feel it. And so he was a little annoyed, but he was surprised at the same time. And Krishna went swimming out to Kaliya. And by the time the adults found out what was going on, they were mortified because they were speculating everything, that the Kaliya had come and grabbed him in his coils and pulled him off the shore, and there he was in the grips of Kaliya. And the cowherd men came running. Krishna is their life and soul, and they saw that he was about to be killed. You can imagine this feeling. You know, your beloved child is in the coils of a huge serpent in the middle of a poisoned lake. And there he was, Krishna, bringing out this emotion in all the residents of Vrindavan. And when Balaram saw this, that everyone else was ready to jump in and give up their lives to try to save Krishna, he stopped them and said, "Don't worry." And at this time, Balaram knew exactly what was going on. And he was laughing, actually, because Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says that Balaram was thinking, in my form as Sankarshan, he never plays with me in my snake form. And here he is out playing with this mundane snake demon playing around. But Balaram knew exactly what was going on. And with a smile on his face, he was holding back all the residents. Mother Yashoda, of course, she was trying to jump in the water. And they were restraining her. They were holding her back. What a dramatic scene. And when Krishna could see that how everyone had assembled and was there, and then, of course, he began dancing on the hoods of Kaliya and punishing him with his lotus feet. Later on, the wives of Kaliya, the Nagapatnis, they were all glorifying Krishna and thinking how fortunate their husband was that Krishna had danced on his head. And he hurt him, actually. But Krishna is so nice that afterwards he apologized to Kaliya for any inconvenience. And this is one of the qualities of Krishna, that he's a sweet talker. And so he appeased Kaliya speaking like that. And also, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna was showing off what he was doing. There were many things happening at the same time in Krishna's pastimes, but he was showing off his dancing prowess to the young gopis who were there. Like, I can dance. Look at this. Because he had their association in mind later for dancing. And so in this pastime also, Balaram is there. Actually, he wasn't there to protect Krishna. Usually he is, and Krishna went ahead and jumped in the water and caused so much consternation for everyone there, to bring out their loving sentiments. But Balaram saved everyone and kept them back from jumping in the water. So Balaram is the servant of Krishna, the supporter of Krishna. And this is the idea of Guru Tattva, means who is the servant of Krishna, who serves Krishna in many different ways in order to fulfill his innermost desires. Comments so far? Yes.
During Giri Govardhan Leela also, during Giri Govardhan,
Hare Krishna. During Giri Govardhan Leela also, everybody is trying to help Krishna by putting, you know, to raise it, the sticks. But Lord Balaram also helping? Or because in the...
Actually, in that pastime of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill, one thing was that's unusual about that pastime is that Krishna was with everyone all at the same time. Normally, in his pastime, his pastimes throughout the day, which go on every day in cycles, he spends time with Mother Yashoda. But in the morning, actually, you could write a feature motion picture all about his leaving home in the morning. Because this is mentioned in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita about how when he's leaving, it's such a big production. Mother Yashoda is chasing after him and 7, 8, 9 times asking him, now do you really have your lunch? Are you sure? Now you watch out because Krishna gets these scratches on him too. The grown-ups don't know that's his coming from his rendezvous with the young gopis. But actually she's thinking that, and he keeps saying that, you know, he's running into sticker bushes and things. So she says, now you watch out for the sticker bushes. So these pastimes when Krishna goes away, sometimes he's with his friends in the forest and with the calves. And actually, no one could bear separation from Krishna, even for a second. Yugayetam nimishena chakshusha pravrishayetam shunyayetam jagatsarvam govinda virahena me. Feels like 12 years or more. So it's mentioned that the... cowherd boys, when they're in the forest, when Krishna walks behind a tree and they can't see him just for a split second, then they get in great anxiety. They can't see him. They want to be near him. So everyone feels like that. And Brihat Bhagavatamrita explains how when Krishna's away for the day, the residents of Raja become, in the village, they become almost comatose. In fact, when Gopakumar comes into the village of Raja, and he's trying to find out where the house of Nanda Maharaj is, he asks an elderly couple, where's the house of Nanda Baba? And they don't say anything in return. And he thinks, well, is this a place where people are rude? Am I not welcome here? What did I do wrong? You know, if you ask somebody directions and then they don't say anything, you might assume all kinds of things. But then he meets another person who explains that, and he realizes that these people are stunned out of ecstasy and they can't talk because Krishna's gone for the day. And when he comes into the village, practically everyone's moving in sort of almost a comatose state, waiting for Krishna to come back from the forest. And finally, when they see this cloud coming, there's a darkness in the sky, and that heralds Krishna's arrival, because this is the dust coming from the hoofs of the calves as they're going through in their herd in the forest, and that means Krishna's coming back. So then the life comes back to the whole village. Again, everyone's, Krishna's coming. We can see in this material universe, you know, Krishna's representative of the sun. When the sun goes down, everyone goes down, goes to sleep. When the sun comes up, just a little hint of sun coming, and all the birds wake up, everyone starts going again. So Krishna is the sun of the spiritual world. Everyone's waiting for him to come back. So in this way, there are pastimes throughout the day with all the different devotees. But at Govardhan, one special characteristic of that pastime is that everyone gets to be with Krishna all at the same time. All of them, everyone in with their own special relationships are with Krishna underneath the hill. Because when Indra started to rain down his torrents of rain on Vrindavan in order to kill everybody, and Krishna went into a cave, went under the hill, picked it up, lifted it up, and then said, come under the hill. And they all came. And it wasn't that it was muddy or dark or clammy or there were bugs or anything like that down there. There were palaces. Everything was embroidered, and there was beautiful furniture, and there were special rooms, and there were places you could go, and there was Krishna holding up the hill. And of course, his friends, often when they wrestle with Krishna, they think, you know, you're not such a big man. We can beat you. We could take you anytime. This is the friendship rasa that they don't see that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They say, you and I are equals. This is the special quality of the Sakya rasa. And so when they see Krishna holding up the hill, they think, we better help him out. You know, so they have their sticks up there too. Of course, when Krishna put the hill down, they're all saying, we'll take it, you go. And so just for a second, Krishna let the hill down. And then they say, okay, they went out. And then Krishna let the hill down. And during that time, Krishna, it's mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion, that Krishna was glancing at the gopis. And he was, you know, he was with his friends and his mother's right there and everybody's there and he's kind of looking at the gopis. And then his hands started shaking a little bit because he was feeling like a little affected by seeing the beauty of the gopis. And then everyone thought, hey, he needs help. But Balaram, he was smiling because Balaram knew what was going on. He saw Krishna and he was like, he thought it was funny that that his brother is in this situation. And so they're all trying to help and they're under the hill. And of course, Mother Yashoda was worried Krishna needs to be eating. He's holding it up. And, you know, she's, if you don't eat, how are you going to have strength? And, you know, she's carrying on. Everyone's carrying on in their particular rasa with Krishna underneath the hill. I don't recall whether Balaram was helping him hold up the hill. I'd have to look at that. But another role that Balaram had in the pastime of Govardhan Leela was that when Krishna first expanded himself and manifested as Govardhan Hill, this is all described in a lot of detail in the Gopal Champu by Jiva Goswami, but Krishna assumed the form of Govardhan Hill. And it was a gigantic form. In fact, it was like this, you know, mountain all of a sudden started talking to all the residents of Raja, and they were frightened. You know, all of a sudden the mountain turns into, you know, with the big mouth and face and is talking to him. What was he saying to them? He was saying, you feed me. And they're, you know, innocent village people, and they just started running everywhere to get food to bring to Krishna. So they're bringing rice and sabjis and puris and everything and running up. And the more they'd bring, the more he'd eat. And the village was running out of food. He was eating so much. Gopal Champu says that his form was so big that in order to, you know, brush his teeth, he would have to have these huge, like, trees practically, you know. And the food ran out. There was no more bhoga to offer. And Krishna kept saying, Anior, Anior. And that's why the town there in Govardhan is named Anior. You walk by that when you go on Parikram, right through Anior. If you start from the Bhaktivedanta Ashram at about 5 in the morning, which is a good time because you go to Mangal Artik and then you go out and you can start your Parikram right from the ashram. When you get to Anior, it's still kind of dark. You know, it'll take you about 40 minutes walking fast to get down to Anior. And that's the place, right where all of them gathered. So they were worried because of this gigantic form of Krishna in the form of Govardhan Hill was demanding, give me more, and they didn't have anything. So Balaram, most intelligent, he took a tulsi leaf, and he went up to the hill, and he offered that tulsi leaf. And then Krishna was satisfied. So again, Lord Balaram saved the day, knowing exactly what to do. This is Guru Tattva. He knows exactly how to satisfy Krishna, and then he shows everyone, here's what you do. You offer a tulsi leaf. So, yes. I think you need to turn that on.
I didn't read in Prabhupada books yet, but in Nandbhavan, like Krishna and Balaram both are painted like black, like Mother Yashoda painted.
That's still not on, is it? Is that on?
It's always closed.
Hold on, there you go.
So Balaram is also painted black. because Mother Yashoda wanted, like, Krishna is attacked by many demons sent by Kansa, and she wanted to protect, so she painted Balam also black, so that demons get confused who's Krishna. And one day Balam was there, Aristasura was like trying to attack Krishna, and Balam was there, and Aristasura as a big bull demon attacked Balam, and Balam like was like thrown to, you know, till the home. And then Balam told, I'm not going to take this flute and, you know, the peacock feather because it's very dangerous. Like, so demons are attacking you. You take all this thing and go. So then Krishna killed later on Aristasura.
I see. Also, can you grab me a Krishna book? So Prahlad Maharaj advises that hidvatmagatam griyamandakupam vanam gato yadharamashrita. If you, real problem is anxiety, and this anxiety will continue so long as you are materially existent. Therefore, the real life is to get out of this material world. Hidvatmagatam. Atmagatam. Atmagatam means killing the soul. This material civilization is killing the soul. That they have no information of the soul. They do not know how to become peaceful, how to become blissful. They're trying to be peaceful, bahir artamanina, by external material energy. They are thinking by constructing big, big buildings, just like in Bhubaneswar they are doing, and having good, very big, big roads and motor cars. That is advancement of civilization. No, that is not advancement of civilization. That is increasing their anxiety. There is no solution to anxiety. There is, formerly I was speaking, there was no university. The university was in the cottage, Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva was writing Srimad Bhagavatam and all the Puranas in a cottage. The university was there. Who can produce such literature as Vyasadeva has given? From any angle of vision, from literary point of view, from philosophical point of view, everything so perfect, every literature, Mahabharata, Puranas, and Vedanta. Veda Vyas he has given. So there was no need of university. It required clear brain. That was to be done by the Brahminical qualifications. Shamo Damo Titiksha Arjava Jnanam Vijnanam Astikyam Brahma Karmas Sabhava. Where is that education? This education, technical education, how you can very nicely hammer. This will not solve the problem. So if we want real solutions of the problems, then our duty is first of all to take shelter of Nitai Padakamala. Then we'll be happy and we'll get moonshine and all our fatigueness will be subsided. So once in Philadelphia, the devotees, Prabhupada was there, and the devotees would bring professors and others to come meet Prabhupada, because Prabhupada liked to meet important people. And one of the devotees, Bhakti Srip Damodar Maharaj, I'm not sure if he brought him, I think he might have, yes. He brought his professor to meet Prabhupada. And he was a professor of religious studies. And during the darshan, this professor had asked Prabhupada, so who is God? And Prabhupada shot back to him that, you're a professor of religion and you're asking me who is God? And Prabhupada was very stern with him. He really was cutting him. I mean, it was actually shocking to the devotees, because normally when you bring an important person, some big professor from the local university, everyone's, you know, running around, getting him a nice place to sit, and yes, yes, everything's okay. You know, let's just be nice to him and everything. And here they had gone to all this trouble. They brought him in, and, you know, the man asks what seemed to everyone an innocent question, who is God, what is God? And Prabhupada immediately started cutting him and say, you're a professor and you're asking who is God? Then he looked at Srup Damodar Maharaj and he said, so he says he's professor, but what do we call this? And Srup Damodar Maharaj said, cheater. He's called cheater. There's this professor. You call this a cheater. And the man was saying, no, pranipat, pranipat. From Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya uparakshantite jnanim jnaninas tatvadarshina, that you should approach a person of wisdom who's seen the truth, and you should do three things. One is pranipat. You should submit yourself. You can't learn anything if you're not submissive. You may say, you know, I've come to learn from you, but if you're not open, if you don't actually submit, nothing will be poured in. And you must ask questions, and you have to render service. These are the three qualifications that Krishna gives for actually approaching a person of knowledge and getting real wisdom, to understand what is what, to understand the difference between matter and spirit. He says, if you approach a person of knowledge and you submit yourself, you inquire, and you render service, you'll get the real knowledge, that, and you'll never have to fall back down again into the material world, Krishna says in the next verse, because you'll see the difference between the matter and spirit, and you'll see that all the living entities are actually Krishna's. They belong to Krishna, and they're within him. And so the professor was saying, no, this is pranipat. I'm coming, I'm submitting. And Prabhupada said, this is not pranipat. And he pointed to his disciples, and they were not professors, most of them. They were pretty simple. A lot of them coming when they were very young, didn't have much education or anything like that. But there they all were, sitting bright-faced with the men with heads shaved, the women with saris, everyone wearing tilak and neck beads, which is like we call a dog collar, right? And Prabhupada said, this is pranipat. If you want to know who is God, you come like this and ask. So he was making this point. So there are a couple lessons there. And one of them, especially the sadhu, the guru, it cuts. Because this material world is very painful, like a boil. Or like there's some growth in the body that is giving us great pain. And someone may say, oh no, the knife. I don't want the knife. Don't bring out the knife. It's painful. But actually it's to give relief. So the guru, the one who speaks on behalf of Krishna, is meant to cut, actually, and cut the false ego and take out the misconceptions. This is what real sadhu means, to cut away these kinds of misconceptions. So this is how Balaram gives relief to those suffering in the material world by cutting away the misconception of material life. Not that I'm okay, you're okay, but there is an actual system and a reality. And until I come to that position, I'll always be suffering in this dark material world. Rakshit Prabhu.
Yes, you mentioned earlier this about anxiety, that material anxiety is not good, and it's responsible for a lot of suffering for people, and that it keeps them in distress. But then we have also been told that there is what is called spiritual anxiety. We often hear about that. And so one may ask, is that good or bad? We would think it is good, but then one has spiritual anxiety. One may even feel that one is behind in carrying out certain spiritual tasks or commitments. Does that also create a painful situation for a person? How is one to deal with spiritual anxiety?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And a lot of times people look at the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and what he was teaching, and they see practically that he's in his latter pastimes. Practically he's crying and he's in one pastime, the Gambira, when Ramananda Roy and Srup Damodar leave him there for the night. They can hear him inside, especially at night. He would become mad, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of love for Krishna. And they could hear him inside the Gambira room, which was just a small room. Have you seen Gambira? It's just a tiny little room. But Gambira means deep. Like, it's a tiny place, but deep, deep things are going on in there. And he was making a peculiar sound, like gong, gong, gong. And actually, he wanted to get out to go find Krishna, but he couldn't get out, so he was rubbing his face against the stone walls. And finally, when they went to see what was going on, and they brought a torch inside, and they saw that Mahaprabhu's face was injured because he was grinding it against the walls of the Gambira. And they said, "Why have you done this to yourself?" And he said, "I was trying to get out. I couldn't find the door. And over and over again, I was trying to get out to find Krishna." And then, of course, even when the door was locked and there was no way out, somehow he got out. And they found him at one point nearby, and all his limbs had contracted within his body. He looked like a pumpkin, as described by Kaviraj Goswami. And it was in a cow shed, and the cows were there licking his transcendental body. And another time when he got out, actually they were all walking, and he went into a kind of mad ecstasy and mistook the ocean to be the Jamuna, and he jumped in. And they didn't even see him walk off. So they couldn't find him for days, and they were looking everywhere until they found a fisherman who was walking down the beach, and he was in a maddened state. And Sarup Damodar asked him, "What's the matter?" And he said, "I was fishing, and in my net, I thought I caught a huge fish. And when I pulled it in and I touched the body, it turned out to be a corpse. And I became mad. There was a ghost inside that corpse, and it entered into me, and then I became crazy." And then, as he was hearing this description, Sarup Damodar could understand what actually had taken place, that he had met Mahaprabhu, because he was describing this long corpse. And he said, "I am an exorcist. I can cure you from this." And he slapped him in the face three times. Slap, slap, slap. He said, "Okay." And he said a couple mantras, and he said, "Now the ghost is gone." And then he told him, actually, "This is Mahaprabhu." And the fisherman said, "I've seen the Lord before, and this wasn't him. You know, he looked all distorted and everything." And he said, "No, this happens." So they went and they brought him back to dry land, and they began chanting the Maha Mantra, and then he came back to consciousness. And then he told how he had gone off to be with the gopis. He was observing one of their water pastimes. Anyway, these externally may seem to some people to be sort of a kind of madness. In fact, even some mundane scholars, they have speculated that Mahaprabhu had epilepsy, because he would go crazy in love of God and sometimes faint on the ground. So they said, "Yeah, oh yes, see, this is epilepsy." But epilepsy is not contagious, and his was. So anyway, Kaviraj Goswami describes the effects of love of God. He said, it's like the effects of poison and nectar simultaneously. Like you've taken poison and it's actually killing you, but at the same time someone's pouring nectar on your head. So it's kind of this, what we call bittersweet, only there's no real bitter in it. The separation and all the anxieties that the devotees feel in love of God are the greatest kind of happiness, but externally it looks like great suffering. And when the devotees take responsibility for instance, spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, undoubtedly there's anxiety there, because there's all kinds of things that can go wrong and all kinds of twists and turns. And just read the Lilamrita, and we just finished reading the story in the Lilamrita about how Srila Prabhupada had promised Krishna that spot of land in Juhu, and he said, "Well, I'll build you a big temple here, and you come here, and we'll worship you with a beautiful place." And meanwhile, the person who had sold them the land wanted to cheat, and that didn't become apparent for a long time. And Prabhupada was away traveling, and his devotees were trying to solve the problem. And even they decided that this is not a good place for a temple. They all got together, and it was practically a swamp. and there were people living on it who hated the devotees, and they had moved the deities onto the property, and they were just in sort of a makeshift temple, and the standard wasn't very good, and everyone was saying, you know, this is horrible. And so they were writing to Prabhupada, and meanwhile, the person who was selling the land was doing all kinds of shifty things, and they couldn't tell at first what was going on, but they just knew they weren't getting the land deed. So it was all this anxiety for the devotees, and Prabhupada was sending one great leader after another to try to solve the problem. And each one of them was like, ooh. You know, Giriraj Brahmachari at that time, Prabhupada pushed him forward because he had been very successful at doing life membership in Bombay. So he had Brahmananda, who was one of the heavyweights, and he asked Tamal Krishna Maharaj and even Karandar, who was one of his biggest leaders in Los Angeles. And all of them, they would come, and they finally, this is impossible. Can't deal with it. And they finally even gave away the land. They gave it back. They wrote to Prabhupada and said that, you know, the deal's off. And Prabhupada said, no, take it back. And Prabhupada fought for it. And there was so much anxiety. You can tell from reading the Lilamrita, wherever Prabhupada was, this problem of the Juhu land dogged him wherever he went. You know, he was getting letters that it wasn't going through, it wasn't happening. And finally he met with the person, Mr. N, who finally revealed his mind and said, you know, actually, he just said, you know, this Krishna consciousness, what do we need a temple here for? You know, he revealed that he didn't like Prabhupada and he didn't like the devotees and he didn't want a temple there. And then it was all out war. And he tried to cheat Prabhupada straight out. And a week later, he died. Miraculously, he just died of a heart attack. And when Prabhupada heard the news, we heard from Shrutakirti that he was getting a massage. And Prabhupada said, Jai. And so, anyway, there are many, many kinds of anxieties, but even amidst those anxieties for a devotee who is privileged to be able to work on behalf of the acharya in the disciplic succession to try to advance Krishna consciousness, someone who's sincere will have a feeling that, yes, I'm getting squeezed, definitely getting squeezed, but there's a purification process going on. Because unless you get really squeezed, you're not going to know what's in there. You know, there can be all kinds of anartas and all kinds of, you know, well, maybe forget the whole thing, or maybe we'll turn back. You know, when the going gets tough, that's when the tough get going. And you really realize what's in there. What do I have when, you know, everything's against me and it's all going down? Something like that. Then you feel like, you know, look at Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Did he have any anxiety? He was crying, and there was all kinds of emotions going on. His family's there, and it's, okay, fight. Kill your family. Kill your guru. And it's like, this doesn't seem right at all. And material life is perplexing. And then, of course, when you're spreading Krishna consciousness, there can be many perplexing circumstances also. And we have to redefine and find out, you know, what is my allegiance? What is the Siddhanta? Why am I doing this? And in that process, this is the crucible. The crucible is where you purify gold through fire and all the impurities come out. So we take it like that, that if we're privileged to have some service, is there a phone going off somewhere? Because it will start our sale of Sri Upanishads. That there's a purification process. So first of all, in those who are experiencing these so-called feelings of anxiety spiritually are really enjoying these feelings of separation and the tears that are coming from the gopis and practically the even death from, you know, from separation from Krishna. These are all the highest pleasure inconceivably. And for those who are taking the anxiety of spreading Krishna consciousness, you know, having to stay up late at night to keep accounts of books and, you know, missed orders. I remember when you first started with the BBT, you hadn't met all the people there. And, you know, you had to develop relationships with some of them. And there was some anxiety. But it's all in the course of it's all in the course of spreading Krishna consciousness, and we do it out of a sense of this is for Krishna, and we take that anxiety as purification. Yeah.
The point I would just add, as you were saying, explaining anxiety, in addition to the point of purification, is that in the example of Arjun, that in his case, the anxiety led to inquiry. It was a trigger for inquiry. And the whole narration of the whole Bhagavad Gita occurred. And at the end of it, when Krishna says, now have I explained everything to you? He says, yes, I'm now convinced. So it's that process as well that one could convert anxiety into inquiry to get
deep
answers.
Inquiry, unless I'm really pushed. It's hard for me to ask. Vipara santutasha svat tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yat syat apunar bhavadarshanam. Queen Kunti said, when these great anxieties and calamities come, then we're forced to think of you. And when we think of you, there's no more repeated birth and death. Therefore, she said, let the calamities come. Let the anxieties come. And it's mentioned in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita that when the Pandavas were in a good situation, then they were trying to invent some calamity so that Krishna would come and save them. They became disturbed when there was this, you know, peaceful period. They wanted something calamity, some anxiety to come, because then Krishna's there.
In Prabhupada pastime that you were saying in Bombay, so Tamalakrishna Goswami Maharaj, he said to Prabhupada that this is impossible. No, the Americans cannot stay at this place. And then Prabhupada replied, don't you want to get purified? So Prabhupada's answer was, don't you want to get purified? And then he understood. So
he said that to Tamal Krishna Maharaj?
Yes.
Don't you want to get purified? Yeah, so that's the point. I mean, that's one of the points, that devotees take all kinds of risks. And Prabhupada mentions this also. There's a book that Virbahu Prabhu put out called The Guru and What Prabhupada Said. We had a scan of it. It's all about Guru Tattva and answers a lot of questions about that from using all quotes from Prabhupada's books. And one of the chapters is called At All Risk, because he talks about how, you know, becoming a guru, it's taking a risk. I looked up the word risk. It comes from a root word which means danger. There's a lot of danger in that. You know, there's so many things going on that, you know, it's a dangerous position. But Prabhupada was saying that for someone who does take a risk for Krishna and does take that danger upon their head, then Krishna is especially merciful. If I just stay back and I don't put myself out, I don't risk. Of course, we don't want to take unnecessary risks. We have to be careful, because even it's mentioned that even if one becomes a Diksha Guru, it's mentioned you shouldn't take unlimited disciples. And then Prabhupada said, unless you're a preacher. But the idea is, on behalf of Krishna taking risks, then Krishna, he knows you're taking a risk. He knows that you're putting yourself out. He knows exactly what you're doing. And there's more mercy in it. Ramananda and then Sri Krishna Purushottam.
Regarding these anxieties, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once said that when along with the devotional service, when we are watering the tree of this bhakti, along with that also grow the weeds, and we have to be very careful with the weeds. So my question is, when we have anxieties, you're doing lots of things, it is often difficult to say whether all the so-called acts of devotional service are going towards watering the real tree or towards watering the weeds. So if all those things are going towards watering the weeds, then that person may do so many things, but in the end he may fall down. And we heard some examples like that. Devotees, so-called devotees, doing lots of things, and that they fall down later on. And Prabhupada also commented that the real devotees don't fall down. That means they are not the real devotees. So these anxieties, they can be very misleading because we may be thinking that we're actually, by taking so-called anxieties, we're actually nurturing the real tree, but they may be going towards the, nurturing the weeds. So how can we distinguish what is what?
Well, first of all, the quote was not real devotees don't fall down. He said big devotees, because someone said, look at some big devotees are falling down. Prabhupada said, big devotees don't fall down. So the weeds are there within our own heart. It's our own anartas. And the particular analogy that's given is that, you know, of a gardener, we have to identify what they are. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in that section gives a long list of different kinds of anartas that can grow within the heart, like kutinati. There's fault finding. You can become a professional fault finder of others. Professional. You can actually become a professional at it. And then there's jiva himsa, which means violence to living entities. And Prabhupada says that means that you stop preaching. And then there's a anarta of doing business on the basis of using Krishna consciousness as your base, you know, but you're really doing business for yourself, you know, to make some kind of profit. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta compared that to, you know, someone keeps a Shalagram Shila, but they use it to crack nuts. They're not actually worshiping, but it's like, you know, this is the idea. That's how abominable it is. And therefore you find that pure devotees are always examining themselves and looking for these kinds of faults and to weed them out. Just like a gardener has to go and look around. I'm growing marigolds right now, and I meant to call you and tell you to bring some. Thank you. And we have a whole bunch of marigolds, but every day when I go out there, there's tomatoes growing in with the marigolds. Say, you can't stay here. These are for the marigolds. And then there's stinging nettles. Those you have to be careful of. I have to wear gloves to pull them out because if I touch them, they sting your hand. And there's all kinds of other weeds. If I look really close down underneath all these marigolds, because there's a thick carpet of marigolds now, and underneath there, there's these weeds that grow really close to the ground. And then there's another kind of weed that I've described in this class previously. When you touch it, when it becomes a little mature, it pops and it goes pop, and the seeds fly everywhere. It's like a landmine or something. And then, you know, one of my gardeners was saying that when that happens, that there'll be thousands of them next year. And so you have, and I watched the gardener also. I learned a lot from our gardener, Jay Janardan. He comes over and he's gardening, and I watch him, I follow him around and see how he prunes and how he weeds and everything like that. Then I learn. And he says, watch out for this one. This one will pop if you let it go too long, and then you'll never get it out. And then he'll, with the crabgrass, is this kind of Bermuda grass. It can take over your whole yard, your whole garden. So he said, you have to have complete eradication of this one. Some of the other ones aren't as severe. You know, you just pluck them out, and even if you leave the root, it's no big deal. They'll die off. But he said the Bermuda grass, you leave one little root in the ground, and if you leave it long enough, it'll just take over the whole yard. It's invasive. There's invasive weeds. There's all kinds of weeds. And these are what are being described, these various kinds of weeds that can grow within the heart. These are different kinds of anartas. So you have to be really vigilant. Raghunath Das Goswami, in his poem called Manakshiksha, it's instruction to the mind, and he's looking at his own heart and mind, and he's just saying, mind, what a rascal you are. You're such a rascal. And he's observing all these things. Like he said, Pratishta, your desire, you're doing devotional service in order to get some fame. You know, you're looking around, are people watching me? Like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into ecstasy and the devotees were telling him about it later, he said, I have no love for Krishna. He said, I'm an insect-like existence. He said, if I had any love for Krishna, I would have been dead by now. And he said, all these shows, you see my crying, you know, all these things, this is just for show, to show the public that I'm a great devotee. This is a humility speaking, you know, extreme humility speaking. And devotees like Raghunath Das Goswami, he's looking in and he's observed some trace of this feeling of like, oh yes, I'm a great devotee, I'll show this to the world how great I am. He said, this desire is like the stool of a hog. Hogs eat stool. What kind of stool do they pass? That's how abominable it is for the devotee who's pure, who wants to be 100% sincere. The word sincere actually comes from Latin, and it really has to do with marble, because when they used to mine marble, it became so valuable when they discovered marble and they could polish it and use it for all kinds of pillars and temples and government buildings. And then the best kind of marble, of course, didn't have flaws in it. So some of the marble people would erase those flaws by putting wax in the cracks so you couldn't tell. But then later on, when the heat would come, the wax would melt and the thing would, you'd see all the cracks. And so the word sincere, actually, the derivation, it means without wax. It means without wax. You don't try to wax it in. You know, you observe it. You see what it is. You bring it out and you eradicate it. So that's the preoccupation of a devotee. And part of what we talked about this morning when we discussed chanting and at the same time avoiding the 10 offenses, the life of avoiding 10 offenses, for instance, not blaspheming devotees. This is the first offense. Sadhu ninda, criticizing devotees. Oh, such and such did this. Is, yeah, but, you know, it's like, but you don't know. You really don't know what the tongue wants to, you know, bring out this ninda, the criticism. Yeah, but it's not that great. You don't know the half of it. You know, criticism. And so these tendencies, the devotee's always looking for to weed them out. And if you're a vigilant gardener and you're careful about weeds, you'll grow a luxuriant garden and you'll be able to tell. It's not that you can't tell. It's that if you don't look, you can't tell. But obviously you can tell. Otherwise, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wouldn't have taken the trouble to describe it. Also, it's very important to have critical association. Not critical in the sense of people who just want to criticize you for the sake of it, but you should be in association with people who first of all, can, you know, correct you, point out something in you, some fault, or that because they're so good, when you're in association with them, you naturally see your own faults because you see that they're actually humble or they're actually sincere. And then I'll feel that, oh, I can see where I have a fault. So by good association, we can also weed out these anartas. And those who are performing devotional service to any degree, even if it happens that they become overtaken with weeds, it's not that there's a total loss. There's no total loss in devotional service. Our advancement can become checked or slowed by offenses or by the being overtaken by weeds. But definitively, Narada Muni discusses how even if a devotee falls down from devotional service because they were a pakva, somehow or other they you know, they were overcome, they were immature, and then they fell back down again. He said, what is the loss there? Neha bikramanasho asti pratyavayana vidyate svalpam apyasya dharma seya trayate mahato bayat. That's permanent. Whereas if you go the other way and you perfect the material life, there's no gain. What was the gain for such a person? So there isn't a loss for someone who attempts devotional service and becomes overcome. And in fact, someone who slips in devotional service and then knows how to make a comeback, like Prabhupada told one of his senior devotees who fell away, he said, now you should be the example, become an example of how to fall down and then make a comeback. And that devotee said recently, I'm still working on it, on doing that. Occurred off for both.
The football coach, Vince Lombardi, said, it's not how many times you fall down, it's how many times you get up.
Yeah. And those who have slipped and then rectified themselves, and there is a process for rectification in devotional service, and that's to continue doing devotional service. We have examples of this. You'll find that they, such a person becomes fortified in a very special way. First of all, it's embarrassing if someone loses their position in devotional service, and there's not so much of a purifier anywhere as embarrassment. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you were at this, you were considered, you know, this kind of devotee, and you considered yourself, I'm this kind of devotee, and all of a sudden everyone's going to say, yeah, how you doing? Sorry about that. You know, you have to live through that in devotional service, and when you do, and you realize that it's between me and Krishna, I don't have to show anything to the public. Everything's taking place. It's my relationship with Krishna. He knows if I'm sincere or not. Who cares what everyone else thinks? And if I do care what everyone else thinks, then I may be catering to that and trying to put wax in the cracks. And you know, and that's maybe not sincere. So those who have actually slipped and fallen, and then they're sincere. Can somebody come back from falling down? Obviously. And it's a process. You know, one devotee early on went to Prabhupada, and after they had taken initiation, said, Prabhupada, I can't follow all the four regular principles. And Prabhupada said, one day you will walk. He said, just like a child. The parents see it get up, fall down, get up, and finally it walks. He said, one day it'll walk. He had no doubt about the fact that this person would walk and come to the stage of steadiness of nishta. But do you expect everyone to be absolutely perfect in the beginning? Or is there a process of perfection? And does it include missteps and being able to correct those missteps? And do you learn from that? Yes. Because failure is the pillar to success. Prabhupada says as much in the nectar of, in the light of the Bhagavat, that he said failures may not be detrimental. They may become the pillars to success. Supada mulam bhajata priyasya taktanya bhava sahari priyeshaha. Vikarma yach chotpatitam katanchid tunoti sarvam hridi sannivishtaha. Karabhajata Muni says that even if a person, a devotee, is engaged in vikarma, it's like he falls down somehow or other. They just use the word somehow or other, he falls down. It could be anything. Past bad habit comes calling, or becomes overcome by pratishta or something like that. Then what is the remedy? He says, because Krishna has entered within the heart of a person who is doing devotional service and knows what their intention is, the devotee should go on doing devotional service and Krishna will rectify everything from within the heart of the devotee. Vikarma yach chotpatitam katanchit tunoti sarvam. Tunoti means Krishna will sort everything out. You just go on. Just get back up and keep going and doing your devotional service. There's no prayaschitta as in devotional service like there is for in the Gyan Marg. When you make a mistake, you have to go out and do, okay, you go drink hot ghee. And, you know, so many other things you have to do to rectify this particular thing. But in devotional service, you have to be sincere and get back up and try again. And Krishna will rectify everything. He's the supreme rectifier. Yes.
The spiritual anxiety, Rakshit Prabhu brought this point, Prabhu. I was remembering like a couple of weeks before we are in Los Angeles, and in the morning after Mangal Arati, we thought, like, you are there, Prabhu, 20,000 books, and we are loading these big boxes into the cart, and the organizers told, you should not do this. This is not decorative. And Nirkula Mataji gave the sari, and we cut that sari into pieces, and we decorated it nicely. And even though it's not covered, Prabhu, and we thought we are putting some boxes in the between, but somehow the Krishna helps in that anxiety. And what happened? The Balaram cart stopped in one place, and we distributed all the books in that place. And Dimitri Prabhu, Damodar Prabhu was there, and they loaded all the boxes in Balaram cart, Prabhu, because they thought Balaram is merciful. And Balaram stopped, and somehow or other we done most books in one spot, and where everybody is coming to that cart, and we done a lot of books. And
yeah, well, when I first came there, the gigantic boxes and Bhagavat Akinchana came up to me. He's one of the, you know, the main organizers and guards during the, and he comes up, he's shaking his head, and he goes, "This just ain't going to happen," you know, because the boxes, we had so many books, they were overwhelming the cart. They were gigantic, and the, you know, you could see on the side it said Office Depot, and he's like, "This is horrible. You got to get these off the cart." And what could we do? That was anxiety. And then you all put, you cut up that sari and put it on there. And then I already went down to the site, and I was at the book table, and then someone came up and said, "Oh, Balaram's wheel came off." And I was thinking, oh, the boxes. There's so many boxes on there. Yeah, and someone came up, someone started a rumor that all the boxes had weighed down the cart, and that's what made the wheel. And I thought, oh, no, we're finished now. They'll never allow us back. We broke the cart with too many books. But but then they said, nah, it wasn't that. But even during that time, I was thinking, how bad could it be? We're trying to distribute books, you know. We broke the cart with too many books on the cart. There was definitely, there's always, when you try to push forward, there's always some anxiety. But it turns out that into ecstasy afterwards, the effect of, I mean, it was stress for Jaikeshava. He had to come a week early and spend, you know, sit down for 1 week to pack all those books with a whole team. And then all of you had to, you know, spend 2 days figuring out how to put them all together. But the end result was, once you finish the yajna and you look out and you see it's done and everyone's holding a package of books, there's a confirmation within the heart that you did the right thing. You know, you pushed forward and fought the battle.
Prabhu, when they told the Balaram cart to stop, I didn't went there for 20 minutes. I was at Subhadra's cart. They told, let it be.
You did this.
The organizers seeing me from there, and I thought, okay, let us escape for 10 minutes. And then they told, they took a sharp curve, and then the screw got loose because of that. So it's not far from the books.
I read in Dhruva Maharaj's book that if any part of the, there's certain parts of the cart, and if they break during the procession, it means specific things. And when the wheels break, it means something will happen to the Kshatriyas. I don't know who the Kshatriyas are, but
Another example, although minuscule in magnitude than the one he gave, was last Wednesday when we had received an order, take all the boxes and books out of the middle unit, you can say a spiritual order or something, to clean up the room for these festivals that are coming up by tonight. We got email the previous night. And
Molly's laughing. She's
Wednesday here. Evening, it should happen. And all the devotees got together. We were wondering, where will the boxes go? Because a lot of them had come back from Rath Yatra. All the tables, they were all here. They were all piled up. There was other boxes from previous orders that were there, Bhagavad Gita's, Bhagavatam sets and everything. And the devotees started at this while the aarti was going on here on Wednesday night. Many of them were there. And then the shed got full, and then they were looking for cars. So we were up till 11 o'clock in the night. I got my full van loaded to take it back home. There was Trisha Prabhu, the other devotee, offered his car, and he said, "Books can stay in my car." But then by 11, we had cleared it off. By 11:30, after I kind of unloaded them from the garage, it was all done. We didn't look back. But there was a lot of anxiety that evening. Where are the books going to go? Because the shed is just a small place. They say, take them all out of the middle unit. Anyway, it got done.
Haribo! Nirkula? Then Malini came out. She wants to say something, I can tell.
And Bhumi go wants ahead. To say something.
Bhumi?
Yes, Bhumi wants to say something.
Dandavats, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Go ahead, you're live.
Oh, okay. I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned when you were talking about the different kinds of weeds that grow, And you mentioned Jiva Ahimsa about committing violence.
Jiva Himsana. Yeah.
And then you said that when we stop preaching, we're committing violence.
That's the definition of violence,
Hello?
Yes.
Is to stop preaching?
Yes. Prabhupada gives that same definition.
Can you explain that?
Prabhupada gives that same definition in the Bhagavad Gita when he's describing the qualities that lead to knowledge that Krishna gives in the 13th chapter, 8th verse. And ahimsa, nonviolence, is one of those, and Prabhupada mentions that to stop preaching. Well, it means that every living entity is suffering in this world, and there's only one solution, and that is Krishna consciousness. So if you are in an epidemic zone and people are dying of a disease and you happen to have the antidote, you have the vaccine that can save them, and you sit on it and you don't distribute it, you don't give it out to people, you're criminally, we have a lawyer here, so whatever I say can be checked. You're criminally negligent. If you see somebody being beat by the side of the road, there's a law now, I think, and Karunath Prabhu will tell us what the name of the law is. But if you see someone being beat by the side of the road and you don't call somebody or help in some way, then you're criminally negligent. Am I correct or not, Karunath Prabhu? Okay, sidebar.
Actually, there was one lady named Kitty Genovese who was being badly beaten in the 1960s, and in New York City, and in a very populated place where everybody could hear her screaming, and her assailants beat her and then went away and came back and beat her some more and finally killed her. And nobody did anything to help, even though it was a big neighborhood with thousands of people living around, and everybody heard it and everything, but nobody lifted a finger. And it led to people saying we need good Samaritan laws where, you know, people have to actually intervene. But in tort law, if you go try to help somebody and then you leave them in a worse condition than you found them, you know, someone is drowning and you take them out and you put them somewhere where they get hit by lightning or something like that, or get eaten by wolves or something, then they could sue you. You should have let me stay drowning. So in my torts class in law school, we all talked about these Good Samaritan laws or the movement to get Good Samaritan laws, but the lack of effect of it, because the people, there really is a question of whether people have a duty, a legal duty, whether an innocent bystander has a duty legally to help somebody who's suffering from distress. And I suppose they do have a moral duty, but I think our legal system has not really caught up to that moral duty yet.
Thanks to the tort lawyers.
Yes.
So the point is, the principle is, that when people are suffering and you have the remedy, it's violence not to take care of them. And so we shouldn't stop the preaching for any reason. Would that help?
Yes, definitely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It makes me want to go out and distribute more books.
Haribo! Okay, Nirkula.
I was going to say one thing, but then you, I have two things. You said about reading when the wheel is coming off the cart, it means something will happen to the Kshatriyas. Well, there, you know, the Navy SEALs are the most elite of the military in the U.S. They're the ones who got Osama bin Laden. And there was just a big crash or something, and 30 of them died. That was a huge. So, anyway.
There it is.
There it is. And you were talking about weeds and devotees falling down. And I was remembering I think it was 1974, one of our beloved sannyasis fell down. And he was much loved, did a lot of service, and he had gone off and gotten married. And not many had done that at this time. And, you know, we were so young and so neophyte. Srila Prabhupada taught us how to respond when a devotee with a big position fell down. And Srila Prabhupada was very loving and very concerned. He wanted to make sure that he was treated like family, that this was his home, ISKCON was his home, and that he would always feel welcome and always could come back to do service. And he did, because of Srila Prabhupada being directly involved, meeting with him, meeting with his wife, and instructing all of us how to behave in that situation. And it was a big lesson for me and for a lot of us.
It's a very nice point. Thank you. Malini?
Hare Krishna. In the series of anxieties, in the recent Rath Yatra also, Krishna Dharma Prabhu was going to bring the books that we were going to pass out during the parade. The Rath Yatra was going to start at 11, but it started late. So he came just when the Rath Yatra already started. So we just thought there's no way we are going to finish all the books because there were too many of them. And San Francisco is not that big as LA, so it's not possible. But he brought the book, so we just started passing out. And then we were thinking, how are we going to finish? And all of a sudden, the cart stopped. Baladev and Jagannath were on one cart, and they stopped the cart. And and Jagannath came off the cart because he wanted to go on a different cart altogether. So it took another 25 to 30 minutes to set up Jagannath on the new cart. And that gave us half an hour of time where everybody was watching what's going on. And then we distributed all of the books in just that half an hour. And we were actually out of the books. So I was just thinking, Krishna actually is... we feel so much of anxiety, but then Krishna does something that will help us.
It's actually the greatest pleasure, isn't it? I mean, if we didn't have this kind of service to be in anxiety, we would really be in anxiety. But this is real anxiety. It's spiritual anxiety. Case in point, I just talked to the devotees in Washington, D.C. yesterday. Amazing success story. That we had a meeting there earlier in the year, and we talked about their goals for the year. And because I think they had done 3,000 or 4,000 books last year, they were aiming for 5,000 as a stretch goal. And I said, forget it. That's no good. 10,000. And they said, 10,000? That's more than twice as much as we did last year. And they really got in anxiety because they accepted the goal. And all that night, of course, we had a meeting to talk about how to do it. But all that night, Lokadyaksha Prabhu said he couldn't sleep because he was thinking, how are we going to do 10,000 books? But I saw from that anxiety, they really got going. And then I just talked to them yesterday, and they had already passed the 10,000 mark by a long shot. And now they've revised their goal to 25,000. Wow. 25,000 books. So there is a kind of, that anxiety we put us in, put ourselves in, that's what moves us forward in devotional service. You can go to, for instance, a Rath Yatra and just, sit there and enjoy the atmosphere and talk to your friends, or you can, take some demanding service on your head. And if you take the demanding service on your head, then you'll make more advancement because you're under pressure. You get cooked faster. Like those pressure cookers, they cook about 10 times faster. And hopefully they don't blow up. So spiritual anxiety is a good thing. And it's actual happiness.